Okay, go ahead and begin.
All right. My name is Elizabeth. I am 45 years old. Oh my gosh, that's old. The date is July 15th, 2023, and I am in the StoryCorps virtual recording booth, joining from Boise, Idaho, and I'm here with Constance, my one small step conversation partner.
And Constance, okay. You can go ahead with your intro card.
Okay. My name is Constance, and actually I go by Connie.
Okay.
I am 60 years old, which is older, and the date is July 15th, 2023. I'm in the StoryCorps virtual recording booth, joining from Fresno, California, and I'm here with Elizabeth, my one small step conversation partner.
Okay, so Connie, I'm a psychology professor at Fresno State, although temporarily filling in as an interim associate dean. It turns out I dislike this position quite a bit, so I'm looking forward to returning to teaching in the fall. I'm just about to turn the big 6-0. I'm married with two lovely adult sons and currently no pets, but I hope to get more soon.
Okay, Elizabeth. I am single, never married, public school teacher. I teach elementary school. I enjoy music. I play several instruments and sing with a choir that has several locales through the Western U.S. I'm involved in my church through my small group and helping with the children's ministry. I'm also involved in an organization for a genetic disorder I have. We are a support group to help parents of newly diagnosed girls and supporting adults with this condition.
So, Connie, why did you want to participate in this today?
I like StoryCorps. I like stories. And I believe, possibly because I'm a psychology professor, but maybe just in general, that personal connections are what makes life good. And so I value conversations, and so that's why I'm here. What about you?
Well, I found out about StoryCorps a couple years ago, maybe, and I accidentally, for my mom's last birthday, got her the thing where they answer questions and it creates a book for you by the end of the year. And so I was familiar with them and I heard about this, and I enjoy having conversations, and I enjoy the possibility of talking about some of these topics and getting to understand each other better, because I am concerned about how we have become so entrenched that we're unwilling to consider somebody else's perspective a lot. So I enjoy being able to have these kind of conversations where we hear each other out and get to understand each other better.
Yeah. Nice. So here are other questions.
Okay.
Good one.
You want to go ahead and pick one first?
Sure. Let me pick. Well, I'm going to pick one that's not super political to start out with.
Okay.
Can you tell me about someone who has been kind? I'm going to start out easy. Can you tell me about someone who has been kindest to you in your life?
Boy, thankfully I've had quite a few people. I think probably one of the kindest people is a friend of mine who passed away suddenly 5 years ago on Christmas morning. Oh, it was awful.
Yeah.
And sorry, I'm going to get emotional. when when I would call her, even if she was in the most foul mood or she was going through a period of feeling blue or depressed, she would always answer the phone like you were the most important thing in the world. And she would, when I would call, she'd go, "It's my daily dose of vitamin E."
And, cute.
You know, we could talk about anything, and just that unconditional, just kindness. And, you know, for example, I worked about 6 miles from home, but my lunch break wouldn't allow me enough time to dash home if I had forgotten my lunch. And there were several occasions that I called her and I would say, "Shelly, can you bring me my lunch?" And she lived probably 10 or so miles from my house. So she would drive all the way to my house, a half an hour drive, get in my house, find my lunch for me, bring it to me, and then go about her day. And it was never, "Oh, I'm too busy, sorry." You know, she would figure it out. And then one day I was wearing leggings that self-destructed in the middle of a lesson. And I was like, "Oh dear, what am I going to do?" So I called her and she was on the way to the airport to pick up her mother. I said, "Shelly." She goes, "I'm on it." She said, "Do you need me to go to your house or can I go to Target and get you some?" And I said, that's fine. That's closer. So she went to Target, bought me new leggings and brought them to me when she was on the way to pick up her mom at the airport. So just that willingness. And I felt sometimes like I took advantage of her because she was so great about just helping. And so I miss her fiercely.
Like that.
Yeah.
The rescuer.
Totally. Totally. And she was also one of those people that when you look at her ACEs score, would have been off the charts, what she had gone through in her life. Yeah. And she didn't let it. She didn't let it get to her. She was fabulous.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see here. How about you? Who was that person in your life?
I have a lot. Again, I have a lot of people who have been very kind to me, and again, girlfriends. You know, it's I think about an old big on the legging issue. I had a friend who was so kind that my bra broke right before I was supposed to teach. It just like broke, and she like gave me her bra. It's like,
oh my
that's
gosh,
pretty nice.
Yeah.
So I'm really at this age really surrounded by a group of lovely women who it's really, really give me lots of support no matter what's happening in my life.
I think we all need at least one or two of those in our lives.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer of multiple. You know, I mean, I mean, I'm married, so that's, you know, great source of support. But yes. I like to have, you know, a couple really good girlfriends. Just, I don't know. It feels good to have, you know, shy friends and hardworking friends, and then, you know, kind of a hippie friend. And I just kind of like to have a. You know, a portfolio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think when I look at some of my friends, there's definitely a variety in there, and that adds to the spice of life for sure.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see here.
All right. You can take the next one.
Yeah, I'm looking at these questions here. I like this one. What are you most proud of in the past year? And I'm assuming that's maybe asking something that you've participated in, perhaps.
Right. Well, now I'm going to start to cry. So I have one of my very good friends' adult daughter was killed in a drunk driving accident several months ago. And she was almost killed. And really trying to be there for my friend.
Yeah.
And it's scary, right? Because it's so raw. And she was so injured. I mean, she was in the hospital for weeks. But when she finally got back to Fresno, I've been really trying to just be present and not say anything stupid. And, you know, I feel like I've been doing a good job and she feels appreciative. And, you know, that's the upside downside of having a friend. If something really shitty happens, you have to go in there and, you know, be there. But yeah, it's been hard, but I've been really, you know, kind of proud of how I've been. I feel like I've been a good friend.
It sounds like it. My goodness. Is, what is her long-term prognosis looking like? Is she going to have any long-term implications from this, or is she going to?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I think, you know, it's not luck, but it just like the car smashed her in her stomach, not her head or anything like that, which is, you know, really makes life easier. So I think, you know, she broke her back and she broke some ribs and they had to take out a bunch of intestines. But I think physically, you know, she will 100% recover. But I don't see how you ever emotionally recover from literally watching your daughter die.
Oh, of course, no, that never goes away. No.
Yeah, you're making me emotional.
I wonder when the men. I assume that the partners are matched by gender. So I'm assuming men talk to men and women talk to women. I wonder if the men like weep hysterically starting at minute 10.
Oh man.
Yes. All right. So now your turn. What have you been most proud of?
My goodness. And,
yeah.
My gosh. Well, it's been a challenging season lately in education. Teaching in the elementary schools, our students have really been struggling with the after effects of the last couple of years and have some really, really huge emotions. And I had a student last year, you know, for example, the teensiest little creature you've ever seen in your life, the teensiest little creature. And she came in from recess one day and she was cold. So she threw her desk across the room.
Okay.
She was cold. And so I guess I'm proud that I haven't walked away from the teaching profession yet. Because
right.
There are days where you sort of shake your head and go, why am I subjecting myself to this every day? And, you know, so just finding finding reasons to keep going and remembering why why did you get into this in the first place? And, you know, trying to remind myself, yeah, you know, the kids that need your love the most are the ones who tend to ask for it in the most unlovable of ways.
Right.
And, you know, so some of that, and then, you know, just, just my own psyche and working on forgiveness and realizing that somebody else's behavior is not a reflection on me. So it's a weird thing to be proud of, but it's been a bit of a work in progress. So yeah. I suppose kind of that working on my own mental health has been something I've been proud of.
Yeah. Well,
if you will.
Yeah. Post pandemic, I think everyone should be assigned a therapist.
I know.
Like coming out of the pandemic. It's like, here you go. Everyone.
Yeah, it's been.
But, yeah.
Kids do you teach? I teach first grade right now.
First grade?
Yes. I've taught K through three, but right now I'm teaching first grade. So never a dull moment.
My grandma was the first teacher for her whole life.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So are you at like a first grade music teacher? How does that work? Or are you just first grade? How does that work?
I don't teach music. I am, you know, which is interesting because I initially went to college when I finished high school, went off to college thinking I wanted to be a high school choir director. And music theory freshman year was just pummeling me. And come to find out, it was because I had undiagnosed dyslexia. So music was becoming a source of frustration for me as opposed to a source of joy. And I was volunteering in an elementary classroom through a volunteer program at my university. And I really enjoyed doing that. So I decided to change my major to education, early childhood education. And so I just teach gen ed first grade. So all the subject areas, reading, writing, math, science, social studies. Yeah. And I'm lucky to work in a district where we do have music teachers and PE and stuff like that. So,
yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So during the pandemic, did you do all that virtually?
yes. So it was Friday the 13th of 2020. And we had 1 week left of school before spring break. And we, I just had this feeling that day when I said goodbye to my students, I started chatting with some of my coworkers thinking, oh, I don't know what's going to happen next week. Because we didn't have any confirmed cases yet. That was actually the day that the first confirmed case was found in Idaho. And so we were all talking about it, all starting to be like, oh man, I remember saying to one of my coworkers, I said, I have a feeling that we're not coming back and I bet we'll come back after spring break. So I was buying into this 2 week to slow the spread. So I was thinking, okay, we'll take next week and the following week off and we'll be back after our spring break and we'll be ready to rock and roll.
Right.
and Sunday night at about 8 o'clock at night, we get the announcement, we're not coming back.
So parents at 8 o'clock at night had to suddenly figure out, what am I going to do with my kid tomorrow? I have to go to work.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then we had a couple of weeks where we had no contact with our students. And then we started figuring out how to get the kids' devices, because I was working at a Title I school at the time, and we have over 30% of our students are refugees. All over the world. We had 28 different languages spoken at my school. And I think in my particular class that year, I think I had 8 different languages spoken by my students. So predominantly from African nations and Asian nations, like, let's see, I'm trying to think. Thailand, Burmese. I had a student that were Burmese Karen, places like that. So then dealing with getting the interpreters to help get the devices and help communicate to the parents, and then getting hotspots for all the kids and all that was quite an ordeal. So then we did, for the last couple of weeks of the school year, we did, I think about 5 weeks by this point is how much was left of the school year. We had about a 2-hour period every day where we had to be online with our students. And then about 2 weeks before the next school year began, we thought we were going to start in person, and then they decided to do virtual. So I would be in my classroom with my computer array going, and at my particular school, we had to teach our full length school day online. So the kids were in front of computers from 9 to 4 every day. And then it was, I'll never forget this number, it was 361 days after that March 13th that all of my students were back in person. So we did about a quarter of the school year totally virtually, and then we went into a hybrid where half of my kids would be in the classroom and half would be at home. So I had my students online, and they would be up on my smart board and they could interact with their classmates that were in the classroom throughout the day. So it was quite cumbersome, but we made it work. So
miserable.
It was something I hope I don't have to do again.
Right?
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Because we had to switch to virtual too. Mm-hmm. At the college level, but it wasn't like we had to worry, who's going to take care of our college students while we're at work, right? All that was taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And I typically, if I'm teaching a class, I will spend maybe, let's say, 3 hours a week with them, right? I teach the mm-hmm. class Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 9 to 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a whole different world. I ended up having to record all my lectures
mm-hmm.
in my kitchen. And, it was boring because it's much more fun to talk live to people, but it was not as boring as having to sit in front of that computer from 9 to 3.
Yeah, it was pretty miserable. I was so happy when they all got to be in my classroom in person. It was a big day.
Yeah. Yeah. Big day. Although everyone is telling me, so I haven't been teaching for 1.5 years. I'm going back soon, but people have been telling me that the college students post-pandemic are, they're just kind of uncivilized. They don't really know
They're supposed to be taking notes. They don't really know. They're supposed to be showing up to class. And so it's really like everyone took a couple steps backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all sort of have. We've forgotten some basic civility. Yeah. I'll be in a store or whatever, and people just behaving really obnoxiously. And you kind of shake your head and go, where is your mother right now?
Yeah.
And I think too, sometimes we forget that the real world isn't online, where we get to anonymously troll each other and be obnoxious brats.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
it's summer. So you're off right now. You're not teaching.
I am. Much to my father's chagrin, he always is like, why aren't you working during the summer? I said, because I need the summer to recharge, to be ready for the next group.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I've done some traveling and going to be visiting the East Coast next week. And then I'm back on contract in about 2 weeks. So it's coming to a close.
Oh. Right, because you probably have free, training. What is that called?
Yeah, we will have, we'll have training and PD, professional development stuff. So, yeah, we'll have staff mm-hmm. meetings and all that kind of good stuff. So, and our kids start back the middle of August. So,
yep. My first day of class is, I think, the 17th of August, which is, I think, too early for me, but. Whatever.
Yeah. And you'll be teaching psychology, is that right?
Yep. I'm teaching, I teach usually the classes that the students hate the most, which is entertaining to me. So I teach how to do research and how to do statistics. And so I've got one class at the undergrad level, and then I've got a class of graduate students that I'm teaching.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. Super fun.
How to do research. And that's interesting.
Like how to collect data. And it's part of why I was interested in this experience is I teach how to do interviewing and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, stealing ideas. it's fun. The undergrad class is particularly fun because we have them do their own project. They collect their own data and present it in semester.
Okay.
And I teach it so that they can do whatever project they want within reason. So people are analyzing children's books. People are interviewing freshmen. People are looking at, and then there's fads. People were interested in homophobia for a while. People were interested in why people want to have lots of children. So it's just kind of fun to watch to see what projects they pick. And then they get super proud of them.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine, because if it's so open as far as the topic they can select, I would imagine they would pick a topic that was important to them. So I bet they would be.
Uh-huh.
Do they have to collect their data in person, like by doing interviews, or how do they go about collecting this data?
Their choice. They can have paper questionnaires. They can interview in person. They can post a questionnaire to Facebook. They can look at data that have already been collected. So it's kind of fun just to see what they pick there too.
Okay.
But Fresno State is got lots and lots of Hispanics. It's a Hispanic serving institution. Mm-hmm. And so my typical student is really by far a Hispanic girl mm-hmm. and Catholic. and raised in Fresno, which is very Hispanic. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of interesting just to see them, you know, kind of questioning their religion and the gender roles that they feel like they're been given. And and so it's just kind of, it's, you can tell they're thinking about it.
Because I think, yeah, I think in a, you know, because I used to live in the Bay Area, so I'm familiar with Fresno. And
You probably hate Fresno just as much as any typical Bay Area person, right? I grew up in the Bay Area too. Where are you in the Bay Area?
I was in Fremont and Berryessa, and I taught in San Jose.
Yeah, well, I grew up in El Cerrito.
Okay.
Okay. By Berkeley. Yeah. I went to El Cerrito High School.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine there would be a fair bit of, you know, trying to balance tradition with more modern day mores and trying to figure out, okay, how do I square this? How do I balance this?
It's very, well, I actually have a student who's working on a thesis with that whole sort of theme that universities really typically encourage independence and competition and, you know, getting ahead and doing what you need to do and, you know, leaving your family behind. It's like, I don't care if, you know, my mom is lonely, I need to study. And a lot of Hispanic families kind of don't roll that way. And so there's a disconnect between how they are in their family and what the university is, you know, feeding them as the way to succeed. I think there's an interesting example with in the psych department, we had our award-winning psychology grad student. Oh, she won all these prizes. She's so smart. She's so amazing. And everyone's like, oh, you should go get a PhD. You should go get a PhD. And she says, oh, well, okay, but I'm only going to apply to graduate programs in California because I can't leave my family. And people are going that, you know, that's not how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to apply all across the whole United States of America and, you know, do your best to get in somewhere. And don't even care about, you know, maybe you do have to live in, you know, Minnesota for a while. Who cares? Mm-hmm. And she said, no, I can't leave my family. And so she applied to, you know, 6 or 7 places and she didn't get in.
Oh, no.
And it's like, I don't know what you say about that. It's like, well, if you only apply for a couple places, then you're less likely to get in. So,
yeah, and
I don't know.
From my understanding too, is California schools are notoriously difficult to get into.
Yeah, because everyone thinks it will be so fun. They'll be like surfing and, you know, it's like, well, it's not actually, you don't spend a lot of time playing at the beach when you're in grad school anyway, but.
No, yeah. And I did a summer camp for teenagers with the genetic disorder that I have at Pepperdine in Malibu. Mm-hmm. You know, when we would be at the campus, I'd be like, How do they get any studying done here? Because I'm sitting in the dining hall,
right,
which has this panoramic view of the ocean. And just like, how do they buckle down in such a,
I know, right?
In such an incredible space.
Oh. Yeah, it's funny. I went to grad school at Penn State, which is in the middle of Pennsylvania, just like in a bunch of cornfields.
Yeah.
And it was very conducive to studying.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah, no, that's, it'll be that you're excited to get back into that. But,
I had an opportunity to do a position. It was like a teaching coach kind of a position, and I started to do that for a couple of weeks, and my office, and I'm doing the air quotes right now, my office was in my classroom. Mm-hmm. This is when I worked in California, and we had, in the district I worked in California, we had the first 16 days or so of the school year to take attendance and figure out our enrollment, because we had such transiency, it was impossible to judge from one year to the next how many students we were going to have, so how many of each grade level we were going to need. And my class got collapsed on the 16th day of school. And so if I wanted to stay there, this wasn't an option for me to stay at this school. And I did that for a couple of weeks, like 2 weeks maybe, and I couldn't take it walking into my empty classroom. And so thankfully there was still a classroom that didn't have a teacher yet. So I moved over, switched grade levels and schools overnight.
Wow.
So, but that was the third time. That was the third time I did that. My first year of teaching was 2001, and I shattered my arm the day before school was going to start.
No.
So I tripped over a piece of machinery the custodian left in my classroom.
No. So
it was really graceful. So my second day back was 9/11.
Okay, and great.
Being in the Bay Area with several of the flights Bay Area bound, everybody was freaking out. And then I think it was a day or two later, I'm teaching my kindergarten class, and my principal walks in and hands me a letter that says, starting tomorrow, you'll be teaching this grade at this school. And so overnight, I moved schools and grades. And then that time when I got that coaching position, and then there was at the new school I moved to, my third school in that district, I got home one evening after work, and there was a voicemail on my answering machine saying, "Hi, Elizabeth, it's my principal's name is Patty. It's Patty, and starting tomorrow, you'll be teaching a 2-3 combo. It'll be great. See you then."
Oh, my God. Like,
wow. So, yeah. So, lots of fun.
That is hard, especially that you kind of establish relationships with kids. I mean, doesn't that kind of break your heart a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. And sometimes kids within a single family would be moved, like the older kids would be moved to one school and the younger students would stay at this school, because there was room for the second grader at this school, but not room for the sixth grader. I mean, it was craziness. It was craziness. So I'd like to think there could be a better way of figuring out how many teachers we were going to need, but this is how they did it. So it was pretty nutto. All right.
So how did you end up in Idaho?
Great question. So my parents relocated. I grew up in Wisconsin, just outside of Madison. And in 2001, my sister moved to the Bay Area to do an externship year after medical school, because she wasn't sure quite yet what she wanted to specialize in. She was toying with a couple ideas. So this gave her another year of sort of residency where she could experience some of the different specialties and kind of make a decision. Yeah. And so she had just moved to the Bay Area. My older brother was living in LA. And my parents moved to Western Montana, the Missoula area. And so my older brother had
moved with his family to Missoula in about 2006. And I made the decision that I didn't want to stay in the Bay Area any longer. And I was looking at, you know, a number of different cities. And I was chatting with somebody about some of the places I was looking at. And this woman said, "Have you thought about Boise?" And I said, "Now I have." And so I came and visited, and it's a long drive, but it's drivable between Boise and Missoula, where my parents lived, mm-hmm. And my brother lived. And so I was hoping to get closer to my parents and my brother and my niece and nephew. And so, and Boise felt a little bit more like home, a little bit more familiar, you know, kind of the community right. that I was raised in. And then, of course, my parents moved to the East Coast and my brother moved back to LA. So,
fine.
So, but yeah, I've lived here 15 years now. So, and when I tell people I moved here from California, I have to be very clear that I'm not a native Californian.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I was talking to one of my friends who still lives in the Bay Area, and she goes, "Oh my gosh, Elizabeth, everybody I know is moving to Idaho. You started a trend."
Yep.
I said, "Yeah, tell them it's full."
Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, and I always hear that Boise is very kind of outdoorsy and you get to go rafting and hiking and stuff. Do you do that? Yeah.
Not as much as I ought to. we've got lots of hiking trails in the foothills. So Boise is in what's called the Treasure Valley. So we're surrounded by the foothills into the Sawtooth Mountains. And so lots of opportunities for mountain biking, river rafting, camping. And only about a 45-minute drive out of Boise, there's a ski hill. So I'll go up there a couple of times each winter and snowshoe. I haven't skied in a long time. The last time I went skiing, I ruptured my ACL. So I'm a little afraid to ski again. And if you're not confident, it's really dangerous to get on skis if you're tense and nervous. So I'll go up there and snowshoe. And then, usually at least once a summer, I get on the river and float the river. I usually get at least one camping trip in every summer. There are a lot of opportunities, but it gets so hot in the summer here that it's kind of uncomfortable to do outdoors things. So,
but I'm think curious, y'all. If I may, the field of education, I've been thinking as y'all been talking, it's been politicized a lot in the last few years, both in higher education and in elementary education. I was wondering how that's felt as you've watched that happen, as you've experienced that in your careers, or if you've been involved or anything like that.
Well, I can talk about higher ed. Although I guess some of the themes are similar. I mean, there's among a subset of people, there's that sort of narrative that college professors are super liberal and brainwashing the college students to think this or that, and they're getting critical race theory in every class, and they're kind of like evil spies. And I have never met, and I've met a lot of college professors, and I have never met an evil spy. I feel like typical college professors tend to be liberal. That's just, I don't even know exactly why, but they tend to be liberal. Mm-hmm. But all college professors I know have PhDs in their topic, and so they're really into that, and not, and I find a very careful to be very neutral on their language with students. You know, if you're teaching physics or geology, pretty easy. Psychology can get a little tricky, but I think that any psychology professor I know is purposefully respectful of their students and not doing any evil spy work. What about for the elementary school level?
Well, it's been very uncomfortable for me because I'm not a liberal. So I have to be, I feel like I'm constantly on guard, where I have to keep that a secret. When I've had coworkers find out about my political views, I am harassed by them.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah. I mean, I've had coworkers tell me that I shouldn't be a teacher because of it. So I have to guard it like a secret. And, you know, there's policies that are coming into the elementary schools that I'm really, really uncomfortable with on just a moral, personal level, not even a political level, just a moral level. And so thankfully I haven't had to cross the bridge of, is this where I won't cross. But for example,
right,
one policy that I'm really grappling with is if I have a student who comes out as trans and they do not want me to tell the parent, I am compelled by district policy to deceive the parent about it. And that, I struggle with that because I want to love on that student and take good care of that student, but I'm also not comfortable with keeping really important information from a parent. So,
the school says you should not tell the parent.
Correct. I have to actively deceive the parent. Mm-hmm. So I would have to, in the documentation, for example, let's say it's a biological girl who identifies as a boy in the classroom, I would have to say he and, you know, what have you, but then in any paperwork I send home, I would use she. And I would, you know, if the child wants me to use a different name within the classroom, I would use that preferred name in the classroom. And then when I'm communicating with the parent, I would have to use what the parent knows the child's name to be. So
it's almost like a horrible play where you have to like keep track of things. That sounds hard.
Yeah. And, you know, I haven't encountered that yet, but, it worries me because, I don't want to deceive people. You know, obviously I want to take good care of my student, and make my student comfortable and help my student to know that they're a part of our class and they're valued and what have you. But that's one I've been really battling with. So on my end, it has been challenging, and there are days where I wonder how I'll respond when I'm asked to do certain things ultimately.
Yeah. And why do other teachers bully you for your political beliefs?
Great question. I suppose from their perspective, they can't, you know, they view conservatives to be anti-education, I think is sort of their view. So how can somebody who's a teacher belong to a political party that's against public school is, I think, kind of how they is perhaps the perspective they're coming from. So I think that's perhaps where they're coming from. Yeah. Okay. Look at this question here. What's something that you will take with you from this experience? Do you want to go first?
Well, I think that it's funny. Well, I guess we were not randomly picked, but yeah. I do think there's, you know, the similarities in places we've lived and our love of teaching, I think is touching.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm taking away.
Yeah. Similar. I mean, I hope, you know, I think that, at least in my humble opinion, social media has really helped us to become entrenched in our echo chambers. And I think it's helped us in kind of dehumanizing other people and, you know, the anonymity in social media allows us to kind of forget that there's a human being on the other side of that online conversation. And so, you know, what I'll take from me is just the importance of, even though we're doing this virtually, the importance of those in-person connections and being able to realize that even if we don't agree, we don't have to be disagreeable about it.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right, you can conclude today by thanking each other.
Well, Connie, thanks so much. I can't believe how quickly this went by. So I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you too, Elizabeth. I really enjoyed talking to you. I wish you all the best through your fall school year.
Thank you. It's going to be a dilly, so I'll take all of the good juju you can send my way. Appreciate it.